This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support. Your number is 877-217-5757. Please send emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. The pride of Baton Rouge, Danielle Scott, is with us. Born in Baton Rouge and a competitor in the U.S. Olympics Summer Games 1996, 2000, 2004, 2008, 2012. That's five Olympics, folks. Five Olympics. That's hard to do. As we know, it's hard to be a member of the U.S. team for one Olympics, but she's done it five times. She's from Baton Rouge. A few years ago, the Times-Picayune rated the top 100 athletes in the history of Louisiana, and she was in the top 40. I think she was number 38 all time, and arguably she could have been ranked much higher, but she is in somewhat a prophet in her own land. Went to Woodlawn High School, was an all-state performer in both volleyball and basketball. I've said she went to San Diego State, which she did, but she started and became well-known at Long Beach State. And let's start there before we get to the Olympics, a remarkable backstory for Danielle. Why in the world didn't you go to good old LSU?
Good old LSU. Well, you know, I started playing club ball really late in my career as a sophomore. And that was the first club team I played for. And I think they kind of knew that I was a homebody, really close to the family, and that I would probably just naturally go to LSU. But at that point, I discovered that I could earn a scholarship to go anywhere in the world, anywhere in the United States, and started being highly recruited, and I think just kind of slipped through the cracks. But Brian Gemolero did a really good job coming down twice to convince my parents that that was the place for me to go with the major that I thought I wanted to do at the time, and that he would take care of me, and volleyball was really big at that time on the West Coast. And that's ultimately where I ended up going, and I can't say he was too far off.
Our producer, Katie Ann McDonald, is a track star at LSU. She came here from London, and that's a long ways away. And here you left Baton Rouge and went to Long Beach. But for volleyball, I think Long Beach might be better suited than Baton Rouge. There are a few more beaches there.
There are for beach, but, you know, my game was indoor. But I actually ended up crossing with LSU my sophomore year in the Final Four. So LSU was really good at the time as well, had a strong program, and they're growing and getting better and better these days. They have a really strong team. But I just ended up going there. And speaking of London, in 2016, I think it was, I went back to London to train one of the amateur teams there. Wow. I was invited to be on Olympic show to train that team.
In addition to your Olympic success, in 1993, you led Long Beach to the NCAA title, and you won the Honda Sports Award as the top college volleyball player. Yesterday, we had a Honda Award winner from LSU, Susan Jackson, gymnast on, but in 1993, you were the best in the United States at the collegiate level. And then 3 years later, you went to the Atlanta Olympics, 1996. You were 23 at the time. That had to be quite an experience. The first one, I'm sure, is always the most memorable.
Oh, for me, all of them were memorable. Yeah, that was my first Olympics. You know, I was in Atlanta, so it was amazing to finally play in front of a home crowd. I know it must be really difficult for the Olympians right now, not having anyone in the stands. But that's everything we train for, to not be distracted by even the silence, right? Mm-hmm. Even someone cheering against you. I remember in 2004, before we went there, our coach tried to prepare us for all the loudness that there would be, because there's communication that has to happen on the court. And he had these applause that sound just like a TV that's not on the right channel. But it was an attempt to make us feel like we were in the moment. So, you know, Olympians go through a lot of different things in their preparation, down to, you know, the things that's going to be outside of your control and environment. I think the athletes have done a really good job with that. But Atlanta was really super exciting to play there in front of the family, in front of our home country. And it was really, you know, playing as an Olympian, it's nothing that you can describe, you know, it's in fullness of words, because you're representing your country And I tell you, if I could have played in a sixth and a seventh, I would keep doing it. I say I bleed red, white, and blue. So while I'm not participating as an Olympian, I am able to give back by, you know, doing the USA High Performance Programs, now known as the National Training Development Program, to kind of feed into our national team selection, as well as doing some camps and clinics of my own here.
All right, 877-217-5757 for Danielle Scott, who returned home to Baton Rouge, and she walks the streets and is a striking presence at 6'3", right?
6'2", with shoes. I'm probably 6'3", with my tennis shoes on.
Or taller if you wear heels. Oh,
yes, and that happens on occasion. And my heels, all right, cramp, well, my calves cramp because I'm used to being in tennis shoes.
Well, I remember meeting you many years ago in the Dallas airport, of all places. But I'm glad you come on the show every now and then. I think this is your third appearance.
Thanks for inviting me back, Jim.
That's always good. You're a middle blocker. And middle blocker, is that the most important position?
Well, you know, volleyball is a team sport. So I will have to say every position is important. I will say the middles work really hard, and there isn't always the glory there. So you have to have a certain mindset just to be in that position, to know that you're driving to create great opportunities for your teammates, and then celebrate when you have those opportunities to add value in the attack or in the blocking or the one opportunity you might have to dig a ball from the back row and serving.
Now, some people believe there is more pressure, and there can be a case made for it for individual competition like Simone Biles. But there's enormous pressure when you're in a team sport too, isn't there?
Well, sure, because everything happens, especially in volleyball, depends on the play before. So you constantly have to rely on your teammates, which was one of the things that I loved about volleyball. You could be good individually, but ultimately it was a great team effort.
You, 5 times in the Olympics, but I think the highest was a silver, right? Twice.
Yes.
Any residual feelings about not getting the gold?
You know, in hindsight, now I can look at it and say, like, wow, that was a great accomplishment. In the moment, it's drilled in your mind, go for the gold, go for the gold, go for the gold. And when you don't achieve that, a lot of times you feel like you came up short. It can depend on the sport, because some sports, if you can qualify, you know, that's a win. I think sometimes we miss the process, the point of enjoying the process of becoming, right? In my last Olympics, I felt I went through a better journey of that, because I had had my daughter in 2010, and I had to really fight to get back on the team and then really get to know my teammates. And when I was finally made it to the named to the team, it was so exhilarating and different, because I really was intentional about enjoying every phase of it, because that could have potentially been my last Olympics, and it was. So not receiving or winning a gold, you know, I would have loved to have, but winning a silver, that's that tough one, because you lose the gold to win the silver. But I'd gone to 3 Olympics, not leaving with anything. So I was super happy in hindsight after winning the silver. And it should be celebrated more, the journey, the process of becoming. And you still evolve after that. But a lot of emphasis is on the goal, and the pressure can be there. And I just, I think Simone Biles and what she did with looking at herself and self-care was super courageous, and it shows a badge of strength to be able to actually look at her self-care and her well-being before anything else. And a lot of times we don't do that. We're trained to don't quit, don't give up. And I know it's a difficult thing for her to do while it's individual. She was a part of the team competition for the all-around, but it was super courageous of her, and fully support her for doing that.
877-217-5757 for Danielle Scott, 3-time first team All-American at Long Beach State. and College Player of the Year 1993, and five-time Olympian, Dan Downtown. Dan, you're on with Danielle.
Yes. I was wondering if you've had a similar experience to Thompson, who was terrific against China the other night and then seemed timid against Turkey and even got benched.
Sure. I think, you know, we prepare for every moment. Every day you want to go out there and be your best and be in flow, but that's why we have a team, and you're only as good as your weakest player. But every player on the team at that point adds value. So I think Thompson, she's been fired. Like, she's the truth. Like, she's been leading our team. But there's a time where other teams make adjustments, and then that's what we do in sports. And we, on the other hand, has to make adjustments. So I think USA is doing a great job. And
we'll be back in 90 seconds, 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. If you'd like to give us a call, we'd love to hear from you, 877-217-5757. Danielle Scott with us, five-time Olympian. Baton Rougean, who returned home after living in four other countries and competing all over the world. This woman from Valley Park, Kenilworth Middle. She lived in Italy, Puerto Rico, Brazil, and Japan. All of those countries she lived in, and has been to how many countries, Danielle?
Well, it's hard to name, but Japan was like our second home with the national team. At some point, we played them once or twice a year in Japan, but we've played all over Europe. We've played all over Asia, and so there's the Grand Prix, now known as the VNL. That's a seven-country stop. Well, mm-hmm. I would say six, because one of the legs is here in the U.S., so that's, you know, many years of going every year to several different countries with the national team with just that one tournament, not to mention all the Norseca and our regional games.
Mm-hmm. How was it living in Japan? You're taller than 98% of the people in the United States. I imagine in Japan you really stood out.
Yes, definitely stood out. And let me say, watashi wa namae wa Danielle desu. That's just, my name is Danielle. Hajimemashite, it's very nice to meet you. So it's awesome to be able to experience different cultures and learn different languages. Living in Japan, yes, I sit out, 6'2", an African-American, you know, wearing braids and this type of hairstyle that they hadn't seen before. And yes, I stuck out like a sore thumb, if you will, on teams, but really embraced by the culture, embraced by my teammates. And it was really a great experience. I lived up north in Yamagata, and that's where they have all the onsen. So it was a great place to do the recovery afterwards. Very different in the weather here, like super cold, snow up to the knees. Someone would come and get me. You know, they drive on the opposite side of the road. And I didn't actually get some independence until my second year, towards the end of the season when it was spring, and I was given a car. So that really opened up, mm-hmm. you know, my possibilities of exploring Japan a little bit more.
Did you face any notable discrimination?
Nothing that I can say, no. I think, you know, sometimes in the athletic world, we're a little bit sheltered. So even living in Brazil, you know, there's, you know, favelas in different places where you know to go and not. But you don't sometimes, as an athlete, going mm-hmm. into a volleyball family or a sports family, you're sheltered a little bit and you're told the places you should go and not. And so I don't recall ever feeling or experiencing directly any discrimination, except for one time we were in China and we were at the silk market. It's a really odd comment, because when you go to the silk market, you do some bargaining back and forth with the store owner to get the best deal. And my friend was looking to buy a certain item down the way. It was a lower price. I was like, hey, you know, it was a little bit cheaper at the other place. And the owner just throws out, that's why you're black. Okay, thank you for recognizing that. So that was the one of the few experiences I had where, you know, someone blatantly said something to try to offend me. But I'm like, yeah, I am. And now we're taking our business elsewhere. How about that?
How was Italy?
Italy was amazing. And I had an opportunity to go back just as a tourist in 2015, right before my mom passed. It was one of our last trips together. And so that was a really special moment for us. And my daughter also went on that journey with us. And I just love it there. I love the volleyball community. Every time we go back, we're fully embraced. But Italy was awesome. They have great food, great tradition and culture there. It was really fun playing in Italy and living and visiting in Italy.
The Olympics are a grand stage and still viable, but there are fewer people watching the Olympics for what that's worth this year. And it is in a country with a time zone difference that creates some problems. And it's a year late, and we're in the middle of another COVID surge. All of those are contributing factors, but what are your thoughts about how the Olympics is being run right now?
Well, I'm really glad that these athletes had an opportunity to go and show, you know, everything that they've been working for. You know, there was a boycott back in the 80s games and another time that we didn't get to go. And those Olympians feel like shorted of that opportunity. And I think Japan has done a really good job of trying to make the athletes as safe as possible in the environment and really well run. It's hard during a pandemic because we value life over anything, right? Mm-hmm. But we do have choice. And so those who decided to go and compete, you know, to still represent their country, it's awesome that they have that opportunity. And all you can do is do your best to stay safe, whatever that means for you. And so I know we were talking earlier, I am not vaccinated. I was about to get the Johnson & Johnson one shot because I don't like needles. And I thought that would be the quick one and done. And then all that news came out about, you know, blood clots and the residual side effects, you know. And I've had a discussion of the pros, you know, definitely outweighs the cons to it. But it's a personal decision. I'm one of the few that still walk around with a mask. Now it's becoming a mandate. I don't have an issue with wearing a mask. My daughter's old enough to be responsible and wear her mask. Right. It's difficult. I'm suffocating in the camp with my mask on. I don't project a lot. And so trying to scream through a mask, it's difficult. I might have to pinch it off for a second and take a breath because you have to be aware of that. I know there were early on some deaths because of, you know, wearing masks and not taking it off. But, I mean, you have to be sensible as well, right?
Right.
And so I think it's a personal choice, and you have to do what you can.
I agree with that, but I'm encouraging you to get vaccinated.
Sure.
I think you should.
Okay, thank you.
877-217-5757. Stuart downtown. Stuart, you're on with Danielle.
Jim, Danielle, and the audience, as always, good morning. Jim, what a marvelously refreshing show and topic to take us away from all of the other stuff that is negative in the world. And Danielle, kudos to your monumental accomplishments, and I'm sure that you are aspiring others to do their finest as well. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Stuart.
Yeah, thank you, Stuart, for that. And you're exactly right. So along with my camps and clinics, I'm also developing programs to work with youth and also adults who who can still dream, you know. So it's Believe, Do, Become, Ignite Your Inner Olympian. And my website is danielle-scott.com, and you can follow me on social media to find out more about the other things that I'm doing.
Well, you're involved with an Olympic group. You'll be heading for Orlando tomorrow, right?
Yeah, so I am so blessed to be able to give back to my sport. And I am on the USA Board of Foundation. I'm also on the U.S. Sports Chaplaincy Board, as well as I am the acting president for a Louisiana chapter for Olympian and Paralympian Association. And with that, I was invited to go to Orlando for the NBC Friends and Family Gathering and Celebration in Wave 3. to go and celebrate celebrate the Olympics in Orlando. So it's going to be a really great time for my daughter and I to share in the experience. You know, we can't go to Japan, but that's one that we can get together and celebrate and commemorate and enjoy Orlando and Orlando Studios. All expense paid, so even better as part of the legend.
Any trepidation legacy about being on an airplane and being unvaccinated?
No, I've actually traveled and I wear my mask. Sometimes even before the pandemic, I would cover up with my blanket just to have some privacy and close my eyes and go to sleep. So I feel like, you know, they're doing a good job of cleaning the planes before. I bring my wipes and wipe things down. And so I do what I can to be safe. And ultimately, I think everything is in God's hand. Obviously, you have to use your senses and do what you can to protect yourself. And again, that's in whatever way you see that's best for you.
A remarkable person will be with us for a few minutes longer. So if you'd like to get in under the wire, 877-217-5757. We're back with more Talk Louisiana with Danielle Scott after this brief timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. And we're blessed to have in studio Danielle Scott, five-time Olympian. I don't know that there are any other Louisianians who've been five-time Olympians, and there aren't many in the whole wide world, and we have one in our community. And she's still a relatively young person, 48 years young.
48 years young. I love how you said that, because that's how I say it. It's just a number. It's how you feel and how you take care of your body and your mindset, really.
And I don't want to go into depth because I know it's a searing personal story, but you have immense faith, and that faith was put to the test a few years ago when you lost your sister.
Sure. That was definitely and still is a difficult time. You know, my mom and my sister were my backbone, if you will, and my biggest supporters and part of my inner circle, as well, obviously, with my dad, who I still have here, who has been wonderful helping with my daughter and things. But yes, 2 years ago, well, almost 3 years ago, my sister was attacked by her estranged husband and killed. And in the process, I was injured and stabbed seven times.
You tried to save her, stabbed seven times.
Six times. And it's really a hard time for our family. But, you know, having faith, you know, my mom was really instrumental in laying my spiritual foundation and knowing that even in loss, you know, things will be okay. You know, my sister now, I just try to honor her life and talk about her. So thank you for bringing it up. She was such a loving spirit. If you knew her, you know that she had an open door, right? Mm-hmm. You can always go there and get a hot meal. And she really touched a lot of people more than I knew until she passed, you know, with just inspirational messages and things. But definitely having faith, having a big volleyball community. I know how much they supported me after that, you know, because there was a time where I couldn't pray for myself and I didn't have my phone for the 4 or 5 days I was in the hospital. And then when I was able to see the outpouring of love, it was thousands of emails and texts and, you know, just well wishes and support. And so I think it's really important to you have a spiritual foundation, but also have a good community of people who can lift you up when you can't do that mm-hmm. yourself.
As I said, I don't want to dwell on it, but your sister, I'm sure, and based on you and what you've expressed about her, a wonderful person, I think 5 years older than you.
Yes.
Your mentor, along with your mother and father, and she was killed by a man who obviously had real issues and was not in the same class as an individual as she, and I've stated this before, if you want to eliminate crime in America and in the world, just get rid of the men. Why are men in some cases, unfortunately far too many cases, capable of this kind of evil?
Well, I don't know if I would just limit it to men.
Men commit most of the murders.
Sure. I think just if we could just learn early on how to deal with our emotions, and it goes back to even if someone hurts themselves, just knowing and being equipped with dealing with your emotions is the big key. You know, a lot of times we just take frustrations out on others versus looking introspectively to see what can we do different? How can we be better? And if you're not happy in a situation, evaluate that and walk away. And so it's always a good example in our family. I use, you know, with the kids or with, you know, people that I'm working with to say, you know, take a breath. You know, if you can just take a breath and not act immediately, then a lot of issues can be resolved without great conflict.
Five-time U.S. Olympian Danielle Scott with us for a few more moments. 877-217-5757. Carol in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Carol.
Hey, this is, I want to call about the personal choice issue. It's our personal choice whether or not we want to get shots, but we're not going to beat this virus with everybody doing their own thing. I would like to see your impressive guest, I must say, to become a team player and get the shot.
All right.
Thank you, Carol, for your opinion on that. And, you know, this virus is not going away. And I do plan to eventually get the shot. Right now, I have chosen not to immediately. And I have been super diligent on the things I can't control outside of that and wearing my mask religiously and keeping my social distance as I can within the environments that I'm in. And you know, others who want to take it right now, they do that. And I know I'm going to get a lot of backlash for it, but that's just where I am in my personal choice. And I believe that as we do get more vaccinated, according to what the information is that they're sharing with us, this thing will get better, and the vaccine will get better, and people will be more confident about it, and we will move beyond it as we have with all other viruses and diseases that has come since the existence of our being.
Well, I hope you get the shot, but I will say this, most of the people who have real problems with COVID, most, are obese. They're out of shape, and you're in shape, and so if you were to get it, you probably would be okay, but nobody wants to get it. It's pretty bad stuff.
Sure.
So good luck to you, and keep smiling, and it's an inspirational story from Baton Rouge's only five-time Olympian. And when you walk around the city, most people are unaware of who Danielle Scott is, but they see her. She's 6'2". And I commend you because I think you are 6'2". You know how tall you are. But if you were a guy, you'd be saying you were 6'5", because you know how it is. A lot of guys who are 5'9", say they're 6 feet tall, but they're not. They're not.
That's so true. Like someone will come up to me that I know they're not even 6 feet, and they're like, no, you must be 6'5". Okay, you know my height better than I do. So, but it's fun. It's a fun joke. And so I'm cool with it. Whatever makes you feel good.
Well, thank you. And let's keep in touch. And you're an inspiration for a lot of people. And
thank
we want to
so
keep
much.
You healthy too.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I mean, it's a strange time because since COVID, now, if you have a sniffle or a cough, it's automatically associated with that. But, like, what happened to allergies and sinuses? You know, well, colds are still real, and it's not associated to the virus. But I do encourage people to you know, if the vaccine is what you feel is best for you and your situation, to go ahead and do that. And I, too, will eventually get that vaccine myself.
Danielle Scott, Baton Rouge, and who did it well, who went away and came back. And that brings us, I do have some emails that I won't be able to get to many, but one's a good one. Why did you come back?
Why did I come back? Well, Louisiana is my home. You know, I was born and raised here. My mom and dad and extended family are here. And I think this is a place that I can grow and add value to the community and live life comfortably. And that's why I came back. Well, I go, so you can always go and visit any other place that you like. I'm often asked that, why'd you come back? But I love Louisiana. It's my home. I think the home can be wherever you lay grounds, like for where your family is or extended family. But definitely my family was back here. And so with the work that I'm doing, I can work from anywhere. But I found my home back here in my hometown, Baton Rouge.
Thank you, Danielle Scott. We're joined now by a gentleman who calls Baton Rouge home by way of the great city of Philadelphia, where he went to Haverford College and got his MBA from the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. Accountant Amin Walker, also the president of First Financial Tax and Accounting Services, our signature underwriter. But he is here, and soon we'll be joined as well by Stephanie Regal, editor of the Business Report, about a story she broke this week. And it is a remarkable story that the Penthouse Club, a strip club, among the top recipients in our city of federal grants earmarked for struggling entertainment venues during the coronavirus pandemic. Now, there are prohibitions against places that provide adult sexual entertainment from getting these kinds of grants, but the Penthouse Club pulled it off, and their counterpart in New Orleans, controlled by the same owners, was awarded $5 million through the SBA's Restoration Revitalization Fund. So, Amin Walker, accountant, how did this happen? How did these companies who provide adult entertainment get this big grant from the government?
Well, it's pretty simple. I mean, now they said they haven't received it yet, but they're looking forward to receiving it. But, you know, it's an interesting scenario, and there is no way to say it other than that they provided false information on the return, on the applications. Both the Restaurant Revitalization Fund as well as the Shuttered Venue Grant Program both specifically have a question that asks, you know, one, if they're open, and two, do they present live performances of a purely sexual nature? And they, you know, they would have answered no to this question, because answering yes to it in the system automatically would say you are not eligible for this grant. So they obviously answered that, you know, and it's interesting because there are fail safes in there as well. They asked them if they have a website, please provide the website, although it says after it, you do not have to provide it. So, you know, when the SBA people get these applications, which they have many, many of, they just saw Baton Rouge Sports Restaurant.
All right, we're going to continue with Amin Walker, president of First Financial Tax and Accounting Services, and also hear from Stephanie Regal, editor of the Business Report. She broke the story this week about the Penthouse Club getting $1 million during the COVID pandemic. We'll be back after this. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Katie Ann McDonald producing, and as we close the hour, we're visiting with Stephanie Regal, editor of the Business Report, and accountant Amin Walker of First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Stephanie joining us here in Baton Rouge, and Amin is in New York today doing his thing. But big revelation from Stephanie that a story that has been reported elsewhere now, but a strip club, the Penthouse Club, the only one in East Baton Rouge Parish, I believe. In fact, I think they have a monopoly. Is among the top recipients in Baton Rouge of federal grants earmarked for struggling entertainment venues during the coronavirus pandemic. Of the $8 million that came to the area, the Penthouse Club was awarded $1 million through Baton Rouge Sports Restaurant LLC at the strip club's Bennington Avenue address. And before we go to the phones, we'll get Amin and Stephanie to chime in again. But Amin, more than a few listeners have asked, can this grant be rescinded? Based on the fact that you say it was done fraudulently, what are the options the federal government has now?
Well, yes, one, they can rescind the money, but also, I mean, they're looking at both criminal and civil charges for, you know, defrauding the federal government. So if they do take the money, which they said they haven't taken it yet, at least at the Baton Rouge location, but they're looking forward to getting it, they open themselves up for that.
All right. Stephanie Regal broke the story. And Stephanie, it's an eye popper.
It sure is. We knew it would get some attention. And I will tell you this, after the list came out, you know, it, all the list of local recipients were published, and my colleague, J.R. Ball, was the one who said, hey, look at Baton Rouge Sports Restaurant, LLC, that's the Penthouse Club. So it was his sharp eye that noted it. Honestly, I didn't know that the Penthouse Club was actually, you know, Baton Rouge Restaurant. But I did dig into it, and I did write the story, and I did attempt to reach the SBA. I find it just appalling that they would not comment on something like that. And that the company's management club, which is, management company, it's a high-end firm located in Place St. Charles, the fanciest office building in downtown New Orleans, Kirkendall Management. They proudly, on their website, talk about their management of the Penthouse Club and several other restaurant entertainment chains, locations around the country. And they have several, you know, lawyers with all sorts of credentials on this fancy website, and none of them saw fit to comment on this either. You know, I don't doubt Amin Walker's take on this at all. It certainly appears fraudulent. I couldn't say that, but I also wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they had some sort of fancy explanation for why they thought they were able to do this, because, you know, this isn't some strip club manager filling out these loan applications or grant applications. These are people that knew what they were doing. Just amazing, you know, really, that they would utilize the program in that way.
Well, the program is designed for live music clubs, movie theaters, museums, performing arts organizations, and other similar venues. Listener notes correctly that the World War II Museum in New Orleans received $8 million. That's $8 million. That's a lot of money, even in today's times. Please be brief. We've got a few people in line to talk with Stephanie and Amin, Jim and Walker. Jim, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning to you. Hi, Jim.
Well, I mean, good morning. We seem to be pretty incensed about this, and yet we've also appeared to have completely forgotten about places like Ruth's Chris and other huge restaurant chains that stole PPP money.
All right. Well, did Ruth's Chris steal PPP money? I think that may be an erroneous statement.
I would say I disagree with that. And, you know, the question is whether or not they really needed it. I think that story of Ruth's Chris really got blown out of proportion, because the problem is most of the Ruth's Chris locations they're all franchise locations. So even though they fall in that corporate umbrella, they're still individually run. They've still been struggling and are still struggling. And they did not break the rules by filling out the applications the way they did and getting the PPP money.
All right, Stephanie, has anybody from the Penthouse Club contacted you? I know you've tried. Are they talking at all?
No, they're not talking at all. And even worse, to my mind, the SBA isn't talking either. So, you know, I would like to go back and double check all of the recipients in Louisiana and really across the country, because this can't be the only one. So if I had some time, I would dig around just into the, you know, who some of these recipients really are, because I'm sure there's a bigger pattern to it.
Patrick in Innisfil Estates. Patrick?
Hey, you know, it's not illegal for a man to go out in public without a shirt, and it shouldn't be illegal for a woman to go out in public without a shirt either. And I believe Supreme Court ruled on that. It may not be art to you, but it's art to me. I enjoy the shows they put on at the Penthouse Club. I am a customer there. I go there. And it is art. It is theater. And why is it our statues can be torn down? Our entertainment venues are what we find as art. Why can that be denied grant money?
All right. Is it art, Stephanie, or is it exploitation?
Well, you know, I think you could make a case either way. And Patrick raises a good point. And I talked about this specifically with Renee Chatelain at the Arts Council of Baton Rouge. And she said, wow, you know, this really does sort of call those fundamental issues into question. Maybe this exotic dancing is art. But more to the point of this story is that the law, the rules of the SBA specifically state that a grant recipient cannot provide goods or services of a prurient sexual nature. And I mean, you know, exotic dancing may be art, but it's also a little bit prurient sexual at the very least. And you can just look at the Facebook page of this club, and you can't come to any other conclusions.
I mean, Walker, could that be a defense, saying that this is art? That
No, it can't be a defense. I mean, again, that's fine. I've been to the Penthouse Club. It's not that I disagree with what they do. It's the simple matter of, as Stephanie mentioned, it is not a legal application. It's not a legal request that they did. And, you know, the interesting thing, the dancers themselves who get 1099s actually qualified to get PPP money. So I don't know if it's necessarily what it is or how it is or how they did it, but they made the determination that these types of venues would not be classified that way, and they could not get the money. So, you know, whether it's right or wrong, I mean, there was a time in the 30s when you couldn't drink. I mean, we can argue it any way you want, but the law is the law.
Mitchell in Sherwood. Hi, Mitchell.
Hey, good morning. I think they shouldn't have got that money. That's not right. What about the poor people in our society? You're as only strong as your weakest link. I don't know what happened to our country when we give rich people stuff and forget about the poor.
All right. Well, these people, Stephanie notes, are doing very well. And there have been reports, and this would be nice if these people would comment, that the Penthouse Club is owned internationally by people connected to Russia. So I'd like to know who really does own the Penthouse Club, Stephanie, but I doubt that they're paupers.
No, I mean, I wish I could give you a better answer on who it is. I think that would also be a fascinating story. But the caller raises, you know, a good point. And I have done a little bit of research on this for some unrelated work in graduate school, but just who really did have access to these programs. And there's some fascinating research going on right now, because this is all sort of happening in real time, that's looking at the efficacy of these pandemic relief programs, which policies work, which ones didn't, which ones got the money into the hands of the people that needed it, and which ones fell short and maybe sent some of it to the strip club owners of the world.
Nick at LSU. Hi, Nick. You're on with Amin and Stephanie. Hi, Nick.
Hey, guys. You know, it's funny you mentioned this, because a couple of years ago, I was on a cruise in Alaska, and I met a guy who was a venture capitalist, who was investing in the very same club that you're mentioning, and he was from Pennsylvania. So it makes me wonder whether or not this money is even staying in the state of...
All right. It is possibly owned outside of Baton Rouge, And as I recall, when the Penthouse Club, which was in the Gold Club, first opened in the early 90s, there was a lot of gnashing of teeth, primarily about its location right in the heart of the city. And they have essentially a monopoly. There is no competition. And the Metro Council, if I remember right, made it that way. So they are benefiting immensely by being the only one of its kind in East Baton Rouge Parish, I mean. And I wonder if they really even need the $1 million.
And I would guess probably not, but I don't know anything about their financials. You know, the grants themselves were limited to 45% of their gross earned revenue. So I would imagine that they have very good revenue.
All right. And Amin has completed over 400 applications, almost all successful, maybe all successful, for PPP money that is available for businesses. David in Atlanta, you get the last word, David. You're on with Stephanie and Amin. Hi, David.
I'm 72, and I grew up in the French Quarter in New Orleans. I've known strippers. I've dated strippers. Now, I know stripping has a seedy side, but even the Catholic Church has a seedy side. A former cardinal was indicted yesterday in Massachusetts for child molestation. But a lot of these women would end up working at Burger King. I think it's important to the economy, particularly the life of a lot of women who can make good money doing this. And I'm totally blind. I can't enjoy watching God's greatest creation decorticate. But as Governor Edwards would say, you're only as young as you feel.
All right. Well, Stephanie, that's a topic for another day. But you opened a can of worms.
I'm so glad. Let's continue the conversation.
All right. And Amin, thank you for joining us today. President of First Financial Tax and Accounting Services, which is our signature sponsor. Thank you, Amin Walker. Thank you, Stephanie Reed.
Thank you, Jim. See you, Stephanie.
Thank you. It was fun.
First Financial Tax and Accounting provides signature support until Monday. For Katie Ann McDonald, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening. Be safe and stay tuned.